Before we jump into this recording, I've heard discussion of this movie. I know nothing about it.
I know a little bit, but like Mandy, when it's the same director, knowing the plot doesn't mean anything. So
it does.
One of my already my favorite things about this movie that I have not seen a second of yet is I Googled it, and when you Google something, it has like the most commonly asked questions people ask about it. People also ask, and the first one for this movie is, what was the point of Beyond the Black Rainbow?
In the 2020s, a pandemic crippled the world. Some panicked, some denied it. These two guys stayed home, drank, and watched movies. These are the Jameson Tapes.
How do we start this show?
I don't know. I'm keeping that whole pause in. welcome to Jameson Tapes. We watched a movie.
My brain just went to like so many places. It was like, okay, oh, we're recording. How do we start this episode? How do we start this show? How have we ever started the show?
Never consistently. But today's a very special episode for a number of reasons. First being that this is our second guest episode ever because we have Kayla with us.
Hello.
And this has been planned for a while. You had mentioned you wanted to watch Beyond the Black Rainbow on the show, and we finally got around to that.
Yeah, so Beyond the Black Rainbow was a film I saw in film school, I want to say in like 2012, so a couple of years after the movie came out. And it was shown during our discussion on postmodernism. Which says a lot. And then I think there was a point, Abby was saying like, Mandy's like the best fucking movie. And I'm like, oh, what is this? And I look it up. I'm like, oh shit, this is the same guy who directed Beyond the Black Rainbow. And you're like, what the fuck's Beyond the Black Rainbow?
Yeah, no, I mean, how you find things is tough these days, but makes sense that being the fans of Mandy that we are, that this would make it onto the show. And it definitely did not disappoint.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Jameson Tapes. I'm Alan. I'm here as always with my co-host Abysme,
and hello.
As previously introduced, our special guest, Kayla.
Hello.
Another reason why this is a special episode is for the first time, I am not drinking alcohol on the show. Because we are recording in January, and I decided to do a dry January. Although that being said, apparently non-alcoholic beer still contains less than 0.5% alcohol. But I've had like four of these, I don't feel anything, so I think we're good.
I have made myself a double margarita. The first one I made, I was trying out a new orange liqueur that I picked up in Texas. That is apparently a local liqueur that is unique to Texas. And I dumped that margarita out because it was terrible.
Just like Texas.
I ended up finding some Cointreau I had squared away. So a good margarita was had. The first one, in what may be another Jameson Tapes first, was so bad I dumped it out. So we're not going to be accepting any brand deals from Paula's Texas Orange Liqueur anytime soon.
Nope.
Because that shit was gross.
But you know who it I would accept a brand deal from?
I know who I'd accept a brand deal from. The fine Stay folks tuned. At Noriega Leather. Welcome to the bit that is going to dominate this entire episode.
Oh, yeah.
I might do a Noriega Leather supercut. We'll see.
Like it popped up like in the last third of the film, and we just ran with
But no, Paula's Texas orange liqueur tastes more like orange peel than it tastes like orange.
I thought you were going to say orange piss.
Yeah, orange piss. But my current marg is Terramana Blanco liqueur, which is the rocks tequila.
Ooh.
I said liqueur. Terramana Blanco tequila, not liqueur. Which is the rocks tequila. Cointreau, which is my preferred orange liqueur for a margarita. And freshly squeezed lime juice. I squeeze these limes myself.
Excellent.
How's this one taste?
And I've got a couple Boulevard Wheats on deck. It's fucking fantastic. This is my preferred ratio for a margarita. And I don't salt the rim. I do tahini on the rim.
I just want Alan here to just make me drinks. And...
it's perfect.
Mm.
What are you drinking, Kayla?
So this is just my... I guess like my drink of choice now whenever I feel like drinking. It's just a gin and tonic, but I've been getting like these grapefruit flavored tonics. So Ooh. It's Bombay gin.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Shot of Bombay gin with some grapefruit. Usually I would add ice and lemon in it, but I did drink a little bit yesterday and used up all the ice. So I haven't had a chance to, I forgot to, make ice cubes. I gotta do that soon, but so it's iceless. And usually I would grab a lemon from we have a lemon tree in the backyard, and I'll usually pluck a lemon from it, but I'm like, I don't feel like going out into the dark just to find a fucking lemon, right?
No.
And then last night when I did look for a lemon, there wasn't really that many good options. They're a little too they're all a bit green right now, so it's not a fancy gin and tonic or anything like that, but they're tasty.
Well, if you need any ice, you should come down to the Midwest where it is currently negative 10 degrees outside.
Jesus.
My little footsies are cold. So I'm indoors. I'm not doing anything till tomorrow. But yeah. Nah.
One of the things I kind of want to do is get us all have Creative Horror all get Kigurumis at some point. Next time we all meet up, just have a Kigurumi party. I received one for my birthday in 2020 as a gift from Animal Fact Files, and it's a skeleton Kigurumi, and that is the most comfortable shit I've ever had. Like I've been now wearing that more when it's cold out, so I do recommend them. If you can get your hands on them. Anyway, we watched Beyond Black Rainbow.
Yeah, I don't know how to start this discussion.
as has become my catchphrase for this show. Anyway, we watched a movie. we watched Beyond the Black Rainbow. And if you want to know how to watch Beyond the Black Rainbow, just go find the Black Rainbow and then keep going.
This is definitely one of those films I felt like I should have been high while watching.
I still haven't watched a Panos Cosmatos joint high yet.
I feel like it would have been a bad time.
That one scene in particular.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like this would have been a bad time if I was high. So, Panos Cosmatos also directed Mandy, also directed the short... the viewing for the Guillermo del Toro's wacky fun time cabinet.
I wish he had called it that.
Wacky fun time cabinet.
Hello and welcome to my wacky fun time cabinet. Because he always introduces them and he's like, I hated those introductions at first, but it became so wacky that I started to love them.
He is not, okay, I don't mind if it was just Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities, but boy, he should not start opening, because he...
His delivery is not great.
He's clearly a better director than he is an actor.
Yeah.
So, and he's not even acting.
It's his thing, like, fine, but I would love to welcome...
He functions well in Death Stranding, but that's because, like...
Because it's Death Stranding.
Hideo Kojima's Twitter is one of my favorite things on the planet. He'll meet up with people he's not necessarily working with, and he'll just like fanboy out like, Hey, I met this person today. They autographed a thing I have. But, like, he just likes vibing with people and then sometimes working with them. Like, I don't know if everyone saw about his next project. He's finally doing a horror game that seems to be taking a lot of the ideas he had from PT.
Good.
And he's making it with Jordan Peele.
Oh, shit. Okay, good.
I'm down for this.
Anyway, Beyond the Black Rainbow.
I guess the best way to describe it is the point
I was going to make with that is I'd like to get Hideo Kojima and Panos Cosmatos into the same room. <That'd be fun.
laughs> I was going to say, I think the way to begin this is the Duffer Brothers have some explaining to do, because holy shit, this movie came before Stranger Things.
And fortunately, we have a lawyer on this show, so we can ask him.
Not a lawyer.
What if he thinks?
Not a lawyer, but no, yeah, I would.
Thanos Cosmatos has a case against the Duffer Brothers.
What was it? Sandler Law was the legal services for this movie. But yeah, you know, if I were, I'd be like, yeah, no, I'm suing the shit out of them. I got that Netflix money.
Also, if the Duffer Brothers never saw this film, I would be shocked.
Oh, like, as soon as I saw the girl captive in the facility and someone around her nose is bleeding, I'm like, oh yeah, yep.
Because this absolutely came out before Stranger Things did.
100%, yeah.
Did Stranger Things steal from Panos Cosmatos?
Hey, remember earlier when I said I Googled this movie and there was a bunch of questions in the People Also Ask? The second one under what was the point of Beyond the Black Rainbow is, did Beyond the Black Rainbow inspire Stranger Things?
An immersive movie with very, very heavily inspired 80s and 70s soundtracks? Yeah.
In a 2016 interview with The Hollywood Reporter about their smash hit Netflix series, Matt Duffer expressed surprise at the allegations that Stranger Things was a direct homage to Beyond the Black Rainbow, which he claimed to have never seen before. Mm. Duffer admitted to having seen a little of it.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Because the main premise is that you got creepy weirdo guy who was a part of, I guess, a cult a la... What was that, like, in the 60s that had that whole, like MK Ultra, kind of MK Ultra mixed.
Oh, the CIA thing.
Yeah.
Because it basically, he's a part of this cult from the 60s where it's like, oh, we're trying to transcend to heaven or whatever the fuck, and then release our third eye and be able to do telekinesis and shit.
I don't even know if it's a cult. It's just like these scientists who have unlimited funding. I don't know where the fuck they get their money from. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's very 60s expanding consciousness stuff. But in a very controlled, sterile environment. So there's this kind of paradox happening.
And
I know this is the most random tangent.
Go ahead.
But one of my old roommates claimed that his grandfather had a friend who was a part of the MK Ultra program and was experimented on. And one day, that friend of his grandfather just out of nowhere went over to his neighbor's house and killed him with a claw hammer.
Jesus. What the fuck? Okay. Well,
we watched a movie.
I mean, it's not like last year there was this whole like court case where it's like, hey, aliens are actually real. Like,
allegedly.
Let's not forget that happened in 2022.
Hoping.
2023. I'm sorry. God.
Actually, on that, they finally got their secret compartmentalized. I forget, but like basically it's like behind the closed doors briefing. So Congress went in and they did that and they came out and they're like, they didn't answer shit. So that was a bunch of wasted time, but whatever.
But yeah, we got
creepy. I guess what I said kind of ties into Black Beyond the Black Rainbow.
Aliens.
I know the guy who started it. What's it like? Mercurio Arborio? Or we kept Alan kept changing the name. Like, so
Mario.
Now,
Mario from Nintendo.
Marzipan Arbor Day, right?
Yeah.
Mercurio Arborea,
which is quite the name. Who started this quote unquote? I don't know what to even call it.
It's a facility. Like, it's just a new age, like psychotherapy place. I don't know. But yeah, it starts out with, almost like you just joined or signed up for the facility, and there's an introduction tape, and Mercurio is talking to us, and there's a lot of platitudes on screen and images of nature. And then we're dumped into a very, very cold and awkward scene of our two main characters separated by glass talking to each other. And one of them is Dr. Barry Nile, who I'm going to point out is described on the Wikipedia plot as outwardly charming and handsome. I don't know who wrote that, but they're wrong.
Did someone who wrote this Wikipedia article like have a crush on this guy, or
the type of person who's like loves Ted Bundy or something? I don't know.
Christian Bale.
Oh. Where is she?
Just right there.
Oh, okay. Good. I was worried.
Chill. Cool.
I'm reading through this Wikipedia summary a little, and there is a lot of shit in here that they just outright did not tell us in the movie.
Yeah.
No, so while we were watching it, the internet for some reason on my side kind of sucks. So it kind of sputtered at times. So I figured, okay, I haven't seen this movie in like 12 years, so I'm gonna look through it as like I'm watching it, and if I miss something, I look down to see. I'm like, oh, so that happened. Okay. So yeah, there was stuff that I'm like, I think there's a point where I'm like, wait, it was his wife? That's because I was looking at the Wikipedia page to figure out, like, wait, what did I miss?
A lot of suppositions, but maybe they're correct. I don't know. But
it is Wikipedia. But
calling Barry Nile outwardly charming and handsome. No, I'm sorry. They made him look incredibly creepy. And manipulative, and like from word one.
We kept comparing him to Christian Bale.
Kind of like Christian Bale.
Yeah, and kind of like Christian Bale.
Specifically, I think American Psycho Christian Bale. But
this is definitely a film that I don't want to recount beat for beat because that would take about 20 seconds. But like, if you've seen Mandy, it's very slow and hypnotic. Not a lot happens, but you hold on things for a while.
There's so many points I want to hit, though.
I know.
Okay. Where to start? Okay. The Sentienauts? Well, I want to talk about the Sentienaut for hours.
So no joke, if you look up Beyond the Black Rainbow, one of the first things that pops up is Sentienaut. Because a lot of people said, holy shit, this song slaps, and this character looks so cool.
I thought there was a bunch of them in a room.
No, that was like, that was mirrored.
Okay.
Yeah, there's only
why,
one.
I don't know, but
it's interesting, because like, if you look up, because when I first saw this, the Sentienaut part really stuck out to me, especially the music cue with it, which I thought you guys were like,
it absolutely plays out like a music video.
Yes.
Yeah. That scene specifically.
And I thought it was awesome. So, and actually, when I looked it up on YouTube, or try to look for it on YouTube, that would be the first thing that comes up. Like, where's that? What's that music from? from Beyond the Black Rainbow, and they said, "Oh, you mean the Sentienaut?" And they're like, "Yes, thank you."
This is like what, 2013? This kind of hit wider release, so I don't know if this was before or right on when synthwave kind of hit the internet as a retro style of music that people wanted to start revisiting and creating. But it's firmly in that. I mean, this whole fucking movie is just lavishly 70s, 80s music video material.
Like I mentioned earlier, that this film was shown in at film school, and it was for postmodernism because they said this film is basically the definition of postmodernism. Like, so the idea of like taking stuff from the past and making it into something new, because holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
It takes inspiration from a bunch of different places. Like,
so stop me if what I'm about to say doesn't align with how you feel about this movie. I think style over substance is a perfectly acceptable thing if your style is good enough.
Yeah, well, and that's what I've said about like Mandy in the past and everything he's made so far. It's like the plot is wafer thin. Very little actually happens as far as exposition, but you are there for just a feast for the senses of sight and sound. It's incredibly immersive. It's just fun to watch, and it's disturbing and just everything. You know, like you're just overwhelmed by whatever the fuck is on the screen.
It is a slower paced film. I think the pacing is pretty good, but this is one of those films where if someone said, "Oh, would you recommend this?" and I would be like, "Well, what kind of person are you?"
Yeah, no.
Like, I knew Abby would enjoy this, but like, if my sister's like, "Oh, should I watch Beyond the Black Rainbow?" I'd be like, "Fuck no, you shouldn't watch this. You're gonna hate it." because it is kind of slower paced. It is very style over substance. There are a lot of flashing lights. I also would not recommend people with like.
Oh yeah, there's an opening little sequence that is very, very seizure inducing. Okay, let's just like lay some very basic groundwork here. So our female lead is Elena. She is stuck in this facility. She has psychic abilities, and
we should make clear, she's about like probably 12, 11 years old.
It's hard to tell. I want to say she's a bit older than that, but I don't actually know.
Could be 13, 14. She's still a kid.
Yeah, she's young. She's
absolutely under the age of 16, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's correct. And she is being studied by Dr. Barry Nile. Dr. Barry Nile is the protege of Dr. Mercurio Arborea, who founded this whole institute.
He's also very charming and handsome.
He's outwardly charming and handsome.
Apparently.
But he's actually a psychopath.
I cannot stress enough to anyone seeing this character within like 45 seconds, clocks him as the biggest fucking creep on the planet.
And, he like, I think it's Michael Rogers who plays him. Does an amazing job. Like, has the most lines, has probably the most screen time in the movie. And does a very, very good job of just being disgusting and manipulative and all of that. But he's studying Elena by keeping her captive and trying to trigger her psychic abilities, but also suppressing them with a pyramid-like object that's elsewhere in the probably in the bowels, I think, of the facility. And Elena like barely speaks, if at all, communicates through telepathy, wants to see her father. He says no, lies to her about the outside world, all sorts of shit.
A3 aboard the Galactic Star Cruiser hotel experience. Kind of stuff.
Do you like Disney? Select A for yes, B for yes.
Only one of those answers is correct.
You chose yes. That's the wrong answer.
Would you like 9 more Star Wars shows?
And then there's the B plot of this movie where Dr. Now goes home and
to his wife. His name is Rosemary, and she's stoned, and she cooked him brown rice and asparagus. And he's just like, cool.
I hate this. I hate you. It's just strange. He drives the Knight Rider car to and from work.
Although clearly he uncomfortably has a clear attraction to Elena.
Yes, an obsession.
That gets confirmed when the assistant, I think? Her name's Margot.
Nurse or something? Yeah.
Margot comes across it while she comes across his notes while she's on her way home or smoking a cigarette. I don't really sure. And then sees all this weird ass shit that he has. And then a random picture of a vagina. And I'm like, ew. But
long story short, she comes across evidence that Niall is sexually attracted to Elena. Unhealthily to a very, very unhealthy degree.
But does nothing about it.
So long story short, Niall then has her killed.
Margot, not Elena. Margot gets killed.
Niall has Margot killed by a G.I. Joe.
Wait, what? Oh, yeah.
Because G.I. Joe was in the drawings.
That's right. Yeah.
So it's a further way of manipulating Elena.
This is the Sentionaut, and I don't care that we're skipping ahead because it means nothing. No. Later on in the movie, the Sentionaut's covered head to toe in an outfit, looking like some kind of 80s cartoon character. The Sentionaut takes off the front of their helmet later in the film, and it's just a baby's face.
Weird frozen baby's face.
Never explained. Same with that whatever the fuck she passed by that was like...
Which is just a thing mutant. That happened. Just a thing that happens in this film.
Like many of the scenes, a lot of stuff just happens.
Yeah, there's a point where Elena escapes and she passes by a mutant, and it's like, what the fuck is this?
It's some dude in a body, like restrained in a body bag, and then he notices her and starts wiggling after her, and just wants to lick her.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
Where did this come from? What is this? Never explained.
Don't question it.
Care to elaborate? And you can just imagine the director being like,
no.
Nope.
No.
Nope. Moving on.
No.
Next set, please.
So, the Sentionaut carries Elena blows up Margot's brain with her mind.
Well, and we should explain why. So Dr. Barry Niall planted a picture of Elena's mother under her bed. She found it. Margot comes in and wants to look at it, and because she's just a terrible person, crumples it up and throws it away. Elena snaps and kills her in a pretty cool death scene. And Niall watches all of this, and he's like, yep, this is fine.
Yeah. Niall actively turned down whatever was keeping Elena's powers at bay.
Yeah, whatever suppression field that the pyramid puts out.
He turned up the treble a little bit.
I must say, the Margot's death scene is probably the best death scene, which is disappointing because...
Well, there's only a couple, yeah. Or three, four, maybe?
I think it's, just four. Like, she dies probably the most goriest way.
Yeah.
I know what we did for The Void. I feel like we could describe this whole movie and it wouldn't fucking matter.
No. That's what I'm saying. We're not really going to hit all the beats here.
I think, I will say, I want to talk about the flashback scene, the 1966.
Oh, we're getting to that.
Holy shit.
So Margot gets killed. The Sentinok gets released after Niall turns back up the suppression field. And the Sentinok implants a tracker into Elena's neck and walks away.
What you guys think of the music. I think it's awesome, but maybe I'm just like...
Oh, no, all the
music rules.
It's fucking awesome. Okay. In this whole movie. No, it's great. And it, a lot of it is also very, very simple. As a synth head myself, I was like, oh, like making most of this is actually super damn simple, but it's used very effectively because, and this is rare, and what I like about Panos Cosmatos' stuff is that it's allowed to be a like a center part of the movie, and it pairs with the visuals very well, and it's just there to fill your ears while all this weird trippy imagery is filling your eyes, and it feels awesome. I love the music in this movie.
I also think it pairs well with like the lighting and the coloration in this is also, I think, the stars of this movie as well. Like it, yeah. Like they are, I think whatever the colors are thoughtfully planned out. I came to realize, I think when it's red, it's supposed to be like, or it's supposed to be like daytime. And then when it's like blue, like,
yeah,
it's for her to signal. Cause she's trapped in basically a place without any windows or any doors. Well, I mean, there's doors, no like real windows to the outside world. So I think that's her only way of knowing when it's bedtime /
yeah,
wake up time.
So what happens next? Yeah. So she gets a tracker planted in her head or neck rather. And then we go back to Dr. Barry Niall, a charming, handsome scientist who goes to visit Dr. Arboria, who is still alive. Why he goes, I don't recall why. But Dr. Arboria is watching travel videos for Hawaii in a chair.
He sure is. He's
clearly very, very old and is not long for this world, probably. And asks how Elena is, and Dr. Barry Niles is giving him very curt answers and just telling him whatever he wants to hear. And Dr. Arboria asks Niall to help him administer medicine. When there's a bunch of syringes, it's clear he's just on like opium or something. It's at this point that Dr. Arboria says, I'm fond of remembering simpler times.
I have no idea what I'm looking at right now.
Oh, that's his penis, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, that's what I thought, but...
You know, when I remember simpler times, it's me watching, I don't know, Powerpuff Girls. When he remembers simpler times, it's whatever the fuck this is.
That's why I'm watching these videos. And Niall says, I too like to remember simpler times. And then we go to 1966.
Act two. Simpler times.
Oh my god.
What follows is a mind fuck.
Oh god, yeah.
And there is exposition, but oh boy.
So like the lighting for 1966 is like overblown. It's like all white with like
black and white, just saturation cranked.
It's not, when I say black and white, we don't mean like black and white, like a goddamn black and white film. We mean, like you said, saturation cranked up to 11.
Yeah, the contrast is just blown out. So you barely, you can make out figures, but it's almost looking like a Rorschach painting. It's just incredibly blown out.
So Niall is wished luck by Dr. Ampersand and Dr. Ampersand's wife. And lowers himself into a tub of brownie batter.
That's making me hungry now.
I'm trying to think of any other director who gets away with being as art, like student art house as this. I'm sure there's others, but like this is the
David Lynch, maybe?
I guess David Lynch, yeah. But as far as, like, I'm just going to put trippy shit on screen, Mr. Cosmatos just leans all into it.
Oh, yeah. I think he does it more so than David Lynch. Oh,
he's the one director really who's got... just like, I did acid, and now you're going to see what I saw, damn it.
How many times did you do acid? Once. I have 15 more movies coming out.
What was this acid trip? How long did it last? It felt like months, even though it only lasted 10 minutes.
In reality, for 50 seconds.
Trips balls in whatever dimension. And I'm not even going to describe the imagery. Yeah. Like, because number one, I couldn't. Number two, go watch it for yourself.
Number two, go watch it. Yeah. Watch it.
It's on Tubi. Like, go watch it.
Go watch it on Tubi and get those real sick ads for betting apps.
And none of those ads will compare to the true ad that comes later, but...
We'll get to that.
We'll get to that.
If you want to see Jason Alexander convince you to play poker online...
Go to Tubi. So, Dr. Nile ascends something, comes back, kills Dr. Arborio's wife by biting her neck. He's not doing well. Dr. Arborio comes in and goes, huh, cool. Grabs what is baby Elena and then submerges her in the brownie batter mix to a different dimension.
Yeah. Sees this guy come out of the brownie batter and kill his wife and goes, oh, let's toss my baby in the goo.
Yep, this is child is going in. This is exactly what I wanted from
it. This feels like it like lasted 20 minutes. I don't actually know how long it was, but like it's very like again, not a lot happens, but it takes a long time. Because holy shit.
It's one of those films, I could not look away. Like, I was staring the whole time in awe. And like I said, I wouldn't recommend a certain, but if you're someone who is okay with surreal ones, go see it. This is something that's meant to be experienced.
If you like surreal films, Panos Cosmatos is like the, of recent memory, the best director right now. There's others, of course, but he's the first one I think about every time. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of revealed that Elena also went through the same thing that Nile did. And so they kind of are both... I think her powers are a lot stronger, and it is revealed later that Nile does have powers, but... not as strong, and he kind of just went insane. He just went psychotic after that experience. And then we go back to 1983.
We go back to 1983. Nile basically injects Dr. Applesauce with way too much of whatever drug he was giving him and kills him.
Mm-hmm.
And yada yada yada. Okay, we need to get.
Hold on, I'm trying to remember. What was that D&D character that we murdered that we could not remember the name of?
Sandoval.
Sandoval. Oh,
Sandollar.
Sandollar. That's. We were cursed not to be able to say his name, and we just decided our headcanon. Okay, but we're forever going to be cursed to do that. Like it doesn't wear off.
But that's how I feel with like Dr. Arbor full of yarn. That's
ball of yarn.
Yeah.
Dr. Sample Tray.
Ooh. So he kills him, then he goes home, and
yes,
probably the best thing in the movie happens.
So he decides on a change of clothes and pulls out a...
Oh yeah, but before you get this whole time he's been wearing his face has been caked with foundation. He's clearly wearing a wig.
Yeah.
And just he's clearly putting it in front and then decides fuck the foundation, removes the wig.
Removes his contact lenses. Yeah, he removes
the wig which was attached with goo. What was the goo? Why was there goo?
I don't know. But it was amazing because when he rips his wig off, there's also a musical sting, which I don't think is any other fucking movie, but it needs to be. We need to accentuate things like this.
Fucking knew it.
I have never in my life heard a filter sweep stinger played at someone taking a wig off. That was awesome.
Aw, Panos, why do you have to succumb to advertising, really? Rand, really?
I'm Panos Cosmatos. Yeah, I'm going to put my fucking leather line of clothing in here. I'm going to advertise the fuck out of it.
This movie is sponsored by Noriega.
I look baller as shit.
Time to get into my cool car and drive around.
He's going to be sweating bullets in that. Nothing gets me harder than Noriega leather.
100% of all pairs of Noriega leather pants are filled with jizz.
From one man.
That's the Noriega promise. You will come in your pants.
Noriega leather. It's like busting a nut. It's like coming all over you.
There's a unique experience on this show, which is like, this movie is really good. Ah, fuck, we gotta talk about it.
Yeah. This isn't quite a The Void situation, but it's gonna be similar. What happened? Well,
I don't know.
We are two things. That's about it.
Thank God I got the Wikipedia page to help me out with this.
I'm wearing my Noriega leather.
Looking baller as fuck. What are you doing?
Look so good.
It's Noriega.
I'm glad you asked. Noriega leather, now at every outlet mall.
I'll carry it in JCPenney.
Damn, this is the best commercial for Noriega I've ever seen.
I've often said it, like it'll never happen, but if you really want to like sell me on your stupid ass commercials these days, you need to make them weird and dark and just keep me on my toes. Oh, I'm really hard right now in this Noriega leather.
Maybe Christian Bale, spokesperson for Noriega leather.
For a cut and feel that'll blow your wig off. I'm more than okay. I'm a Noriega man.
Sorry, were you talking? I was too busy enjoying my Noriega leather.
Panos Cosmatos, if you're listening, I need you to put out a line of clothing, please. I will quit my job and work for you.
Aww.
I'm better than okay.
Great.
I'm perfect.
Because of the smooth, relaxed fit of my Noriega leather. Did you know that Noriega leather is entirely sustainable?
You know what he said? He said, Noriega leather, now available.
I know what you're thinking. A jacket probably cost a lot of money, but you'd be surprised at how affordable it was. Anyway, I'm probably about to kill you.
I tell you about our line of purses, but you're going to die soon. That's right, ladies. You don't have to feel left out either. Just hop online for our designer handbags.
Noriega leather has a full assortment of designer handbags, purses, or... Oh, yep, uh-oh. Gonna gouge your eyes out. Oh.
There we go. Okay.
Yeah.
A damn shame that now you can't see the low, low prices at Noriega leather.
Noriega leather, it's beyond the black rainbow. It's really the slogan.
Go beyond the black rainbow of savings at Noriega leather.
Oh, I'm actually in tears.
I'll never be happy without Noriega leather handbags. That's the real reason she's here.
I'm over here Googling whether Noriega leather is an actual thing, and it doesn't look like it.
Damn it.
He also takes out contacts that have been concealing that his eyes are like completely black.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he gets changed. He has a special outfit for this by a company called Noriega Leathers. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're looking for a good leather jacket at an affordable price,
this almost felt like a product placement. It's not so we looked it up. It's not a real company. It's probably a reference to the dictator. Whatever. I think it's a Panama dictator.
Yeah, probably.
But holy shit, we just ran with
it. It was just a fun in joke to just continue with, because he gets dressed up in this ridiculous leather outfit, which we soon just started recognizing. Oh, this is giallo stuff. Like, this is black glove killer. He takes out a weird ass knife. He kills his wife.
There's actually a point before that where his wife is like, "What are you wearing?
What are you wearing?" But before he kills her, he explains that I looked at the void and the void looked back, and it was like seeing the eyes of God. It was like looking beyond the black rainbow.
Title.
Also, if you're looking for easy, foolproof recipes that will leave you craving more, HelloFresh.com.
Instacart.
Yeah. We just need to do our podcast ad read demo reel.
We do.
No, I honestly, if I was going to get sponsored, I'd be sponsored by, I would like us to be sponsored by Noriega Leathers.
Noriega Leather.
It's going to make you look good, and you may come in your pants when you wear.
Guaranteed.
Goes, holy shit. Every time,
100% of Noriega Leather pants contain semen. The semen of the person wearing it. You will come in your pants.
He put it on, and he just looks like he's sexually pleasured by the leather he's wearing. You're like, what the hell?
He does a good job of portraying the fact that everything he does, he just takes, like, he either hates things or is just sexually obsessed with them. He hates his wife. He probably hates Dr. Arborea because he kills him. But he loves his car. He loves his Noriega leather, and who can blame him on that front? And just goes on a psychotic killing rampage after this.
Yep, kills his wife. In another scene that feels like it goes on for a really long time.
Yeah,
in a good way.
Yeah.
Although the way he kills his wife, he actually pokes his fingers into his wife's eyes and kills her that way.
It's a little underwhelming.
Yeah, I feel like this movie should have had more blood.
Especially considering the movie this guy made after this.
Yeah.
I wonder if he was just trying to go under because of, like, this is his first film, and then for Mandy, he's like, okay, fuck it, I'm going all in.
Maybe. Yeah. No, maybe. I don't know. That's something I would ask him if I was able to interview him. But so Dr. Barry Nile kills his wife, goes back to the facility looking for Elena. Elena has escaped, basically gone through corridors and tunnels and all sorts of stuff and vents, and has made it to the outside world, where she kind of wanders around a field. Dr. Barry Nile looks for her in the facility, realizes she's not there, smells her bed, and then hops in his sick car with the GPS tracking device.
There's a zombie for no reason.
Yeah, the mutant. This is there. Don't question it.
Oh yeah, there's a point where she passed by into the award-winning gardens.
Oh yeah, our award-winning gardens, which they look okay. Yeah. I've seen better.
Yeah, so I was like, okay. But at the same time, there's a retro future feel about this that
so good.
I love retro, like, I don't know why, but recently I've been really liking retro futuristic style shit. At least like pictures and stuff like that. I feel like the whatever travel video that Dr. Aurora Borealis was watching kind of had that sort of vibe too, and I'm like, yeah. I have told David this. If I had the ability to be a time traveling tourist, I fucking would. Oh my god, I fucking would. I would love to travel to like the 1960s and 1970s and like visit, like, go to like the 1960s World's Fair and see that shit. Oh my God.
Hey, Disneyland. Just saying, the retro futurist aesthetic is really popular right now. And yeah. Like, do fucking something with Tomorrowland, please.
Yeah.
Something.
Right now, I think the best Tomorrowland in Disneyland, going off on a tangent, is in Florida, because they still maintain a bit of that retro futurism that they used to have. They once had a House of Tomorrow that they featured in Disneyland.
Well, I don't go to Florida.
And I won't be for the foreseeable future.
Not until things change.
Not until we saw that state off and it floats into the sea.
Not until someone candies Ron DeSantis right upside the head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
With a 44 Magnum candy. Until someone puts him on a candy in the town square and candies his head right off.
But I will say, actually, I wouldn't mind visiting, like, again, time traveling tourists. I would not mind time traveling to Disneyland in the 1960s and seeing, like, going to Tomorrowland to see that retro futuristic shit.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Be able to like see like ride what I'm trying to think of, like, actually that's when the house of the future came about, as well as like other rides that don't exist anymore.
I mean, like, other than Space Mountain, I can't really think of anything left in Disneyland that still retains that.
In terms of, well, yeah, because that's why I say Florida is better, because they still have the Carousel of Progress,
right?
As well as the People Mover, which I think still has that vibe as well.
I think so, yeah.
Anywho, back.
Anyway, we watched the movie.
We watched the movie.
So Dr. Barry Nile tracks down Elena. She is within the proximity of two just heavy metal guys out in a field drinking beer called Beer. And one of them goes to take a piss. And
one of them looks a lot like Panos Cosmatos.
We thought it was him. It's not, but we thought it was him, which would have been a cool little thing, but whatever. Dr. Barry now kills both of them in very creepy ways. And to be fair, the second death is very, like, gory, very giallo, like, stabs him in the throat, and there's, like, just a comical hose spray of blood coming out of it. So that's, you know, that was a good kill, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
I think it's just disappointing because, like, he's the last one to die. Like, Elena kills him, but he dies in the most quickest way. Like, she's just
Wow.
Oh.
That is very anticlimactic.
Oh.
I was hoping for a better death.
Yeah, I was hoping his, like, eyes melted out of his face and his guts erupted out of his mouth or something.
Really?
Well, that being said, they can't get blood on the Noriega leather.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it a pass.
That's why he died the way he did. He didn't want
to... Oh, you will be surprised at how easy they are to clean.
Just, like, kills him with her psychic abilities, and he just lands on a rock and dies. And it's like,
well, and that's what's strange, because we have this, like, it's set up as a showdown. He eventually finds her, and they're staring each other down, and he's demonstrated some psychic abilities. You're like, oh, we're going to have, like, a telekinesis off or something. And his feet get stuck, and he's pleading with her to come with him. With him. And then he, like, falls over and hits his head on a rock and dies. And that's it. In 5 seconds, it's over. And then she wanders and she's going towards a suburb. And then the movie ends. After all of that manipulation and dreamlike just hypnosis, all this stuff, it just ends real quick.
Yeah. I will say the ending is kind of disappointing. I would have liked it if, like, there was a point where they were just, even if they just stare at each other. And so when she uses her psychic ability, it, like, blurs. Like, if they're, like, maybe if, like, they were trying to use it on each other, and it blurs, and she's getting bloodied and he's getting bloodied. And then, but then he ends up, like, his head exploding or some shit. Like, that would have, I would have been totally fine with that. But
I feel like they got to in the to filming the last scene of the movie, and Panos Cosmatos look, all right, how much budget do we have to film the finale of my movie? I have $30.
And I really want to buy a Happy Meal, so running low.
Just fall and hit your head on the rock. That's it.
Well, and apparently this was funded by residuals from Tombstone, because that's what his father shot.
Oh, yeah. Panos Cosmatos is the son of a director who worked on actually a few films. Like, he worked on Rambo and or Rambo Part 2 or whatever the hell.
Mm-hmm.
As well as... oh, God, I'm blanking now, but...
It's stuff, but this this movie cost over $1 million, and it made $56,000. So, you know, budget wafer thin, especially for the amount of, like, special effects being done here. Oh, boy. But, I mean, he still got to make another movie, and he's working on a third, so, you know, good on him.
Yeah, from what I read, this movie initially didn't get a very good reception. Then Mandy came out and people went back and discovered this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it found a lot more favor then.
Good. So that's the plot. No idea what the fuck it means, but, again, style over substance. And the style over substance, is
absolutely
It's just great. It's kind of like how, you know, we describe The Void. You have to see it. And trying to describe it is going to be doing a disservice. But it was just, I had a great time watching this. This was so fun. I know we spent the last half hour making Noriega leather jokes, but it doesn't take away from the fact that it's just a very, very enjoyable watch.
Yeah. The thing is, I remember when I first watched it, like, oh, this was fucking good. But, like, you know how, like, time passes and then you rewatch something, you're like, oh, this is not as good as I remember it being. I'm glad, like, now after rewatching, I'm like, oh, thank God, it actually is still good. It
still holds up.
Still holds up, damn. Because, I mean, that's happened to me with, like, reading books and movies. I used to recommend the book The Star is My Destination until someone reminded me of, like, certain things that happen in the book, and then I reread it. I'm like, ooh, I probably shouldn't be recommending this book.
Oh, hey, looks like we nailed it. Normally cited other references, Daft Punk's Electroma,
hell yeah.
Dario Argento's Suspiria, and George Lucas's THX 1138.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's a big one, yeah.
Now that I'm thinking about it, yeah, totally.
I'm looking up his inspirations, too, and then, like, I see that Aldous Huxley. I'm like, oh, yeah, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World is absolutely a...
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, the DNA of this movie is wonderful, but it feels like its own thing, which is always the best outcome there.
I've not seen THX 1138. Is that in...
It's good. I don't... It's worth a watch. If you're a cinephile, it's worth a watch. American Graffiti is not worth a watch. That movie sucks.
I've seen it. It's whatever.
It's boring. It is boring to me. Like, I just was waiting for it to end. But THX is... It's out there. It's strange. But I... Yeah, if you have a curiosity, satisfy it. I think it's worth a watch. Just to say you've seen it at this point.
Yeah, I was looking at the inspirations. That was one of them, apparently, along with, like, A Space Odyssey and Clockwork Orange. I'm like, well, that's
definitely.
Of course, yeah, that's no shocker.
Of course.
And then he said the pacing is similar to Apocalypse Now. He said he wanted to do it, make it slow and hypnotic so it feels like a trance film. This is supposed to feel like a dream.
Yeah, and all of his stuff does. Everything feels like, well, I would say a nightmare. All of it feels like a nightmare, a dream. But definitely.
Like, the idea is to be dreamlike.
But. Yes. Man.
God, it's hard to talk about. Like.
Yeah, I mean, this we've done this before. This is how we describe The Void. So if you watch The Void based on our recommendation. Watch this. Really just do watch this. It's a really good movie. So go into it with the right mindset. Don't just like turn it on for fun with grandma, but
okay, grandma. You know what?
Actually do that and tell us how it goes.
See what grandma says.
Do you guys usually come up with a drink or something?
Yes, we do. We have to make a drink now.
Oh boy. God. What's a typical like 1960s drink or like old fashioned drink?
Well, most of it takes place in 83.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we could go that route, but I'm going to kind of just do this by feel, and I'm going to need Alan's help on this because I want to like tequila. My body rejects it. I'm getting into mezcal slowly, so maybe I can eventually get into tequila. But when I think of this movie, visually speaking, like I keep thinking of a tequila sunrise because of the colors. So can we work? Okay. We make a modified version of a tequila sunrise or something in that vein.
I think you would have to use like a mix of like red, oranges, but also probably, I don't know if you could add like a blues, because blue does pop up quite a bit in this.
Yeah, blue would be like either a garnish or it would be a small part. And I don't know if we can throw blue curacao into the mix, but that would be one option.
Blue curacao would fit. Because blue curacao has kind of like an orange taste, and the tequila sunrise is simple. It's tequila, grenadine, and orange juice layered. Mm-hmm. I don't know where curacao would layer.
I feel like there should be some sort of black inky layer, though, because of that one scene from 1966.
Okay, I've got a little something going on. If you made a tequila sunrise.
Excuse me.
And.
Ooh, okay. Can we garnish with two blackberries instead of cherries?
Ooh.
What about black eyes?
What about black cherries?
Black cherries. Yeah. Just something really, really dark.
Yeah. Well, black cherries aren't really that black, though.
This is a challenging flavor that I think. Because it's also, this got really popular in the 80s. Okay, if you layered a tequila sunrise and then got like an eyedropper and on the top of the drink did a stripe of black Sambuca.
Yeah.
That is the black rainbow.
Oh, that would be cool.
But Sambuca, if you know.
Based off
of it's very herbal. Yeah. I like adding a bit of herbaceousness to my drink, but
it's based off of aniseed. Let's say it's an Italian liqueur.
Hey, but,
so that makes sense for sure. But yeah, Sambuca is it's interesting. It's hard to describe until you've just had it.
And yeah, let the black rainbow sink to the bottom of all the red. The red. And that's the sunrise beyond the black rainbow.
Yeah.
Beyond the black sunrise.
Ooh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Beyond the black sunrise. There you go.
Sunrise. Yep.
That is awesome. Hell yeah. Okay.
Won't you come and wash away the red? Anyway,
Spider Room moments.
The whole movie.
The whole damn movie. Yeah. Man.
It's gotta be the baby face.
That's definitely one of them. I think it's, for me, it's the mutant licking the window, trying to get to her.
That actor that they paid for the day, who clearly had a fucking blast. Yeah.
So you gotta be as weird as fucking possible. I got this, man.
Got this. I'm gonna lick that fucking window. That wasn't even the script. He just started doing that. What about you, Kayla?
Oh God, I think I'm with you with the mutant, but I'm trying to. Yeah, I think the. Yeah, I would say the mutant because like, it comes the at least the sentient came. A sentient came earlier, so it's like okay, it is part of the movie, but. The mutant never shows up anywhere else in this fucking film. And it's just something she passes by. It's just a weird block.
I think the implication is that they've put other people in the goo and it has not worked out.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, but they haven't even like burned the body or buried it somewhere. They just put it in a bag and left it in a corridor. And just left him there. It's just so random. I love it.
But yeah, I think that would be the Spider-Man room moment for me.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not sure how to like this movie. I'm not sure how to.
No, we're in the exact same place we are. Go watch this movie. Thanks for watching the Jameson tapes.
If you like what we do, please support us on the Creative Horror Patreon. Lots of fun bonus, cool bonus stuff coming out there.
Mm-hmm.
Subscribe to us on YouTube. Get in the comments. Give us a like.
Just say random shit.
Tell me how handsome I am.
And how outwardly handsome and charismatic Dr. Barry Nile is.
Yes.
Apparently.
Looking at you, Wikipedia editor. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Who the fuck edited that?
Who wrote that?
They are incorrect.
Very. Normally I don't like judge people and their interpretations on things, but no, you're wrong. You're very wrong. Who wrote that?
Dr. Barry Nile looks like if Carl Sagan wanted to fuck his mother.
In a wig.
In a wig. Held down with goop. I think I said it during the viewing. I was like, when he's bald, doesn't have his contacts, dressed up in Noriega leather, I'm like, he looks less intimidating here than when he is in his like suit. It's just, God, he's creepy. Very, very good job on that. Anyway, bye.
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 The Jameson Tapes is hosted and created by Alan Chaney and Abysme. If you have a movie suggestion for the podcast, please leave a comment, message us on the Creative Horror Discord, or tweet at Creative Horror with the hashtag Jameson Tapes. Creative Horror is a network of creators working together to build a constructive community of horror fans. Please visit us at creativehorror.com.